mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, after announcing its best main stage series yet, the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts is launching its Vision 2035 strategic plan to guide the next decade of growth. CEO Heather Clough will tell us more. Also this morning, ready for a road trip? Bring your appetite, because award-winning travel writer and native Buckeye, Brandi Gleason, tells us where to find the most unique eats and eateries of Ohio. And the final countdown is on to America's semi-quincentennial. We have what you need for a celebration worthy of a 250th birthday. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition from Monday, June 29th, 2026. Did you realize that this month marks not only, well, the month of June, so it doesn't mark our 250th birthday yet, but you get the idea. This month marks the 50th anniversary, of the Honda Accord. I saw this over the weekend, and I did not realize the 50th anniversary of the Honda Accord. It was introduced in June of 1976, and of course in 1982 became the first car, from a Japanese brand to be built in the U.S. And of course, right here in Ohio. The rest, as they say, is history. It would be, I think, impossible to overstate just how impactful that car has been to the state of Ohio. More than 13 million Accords have been built here in the Buckeye State since. 13 million of them. And of course, you know, it was just the beginning. Opened up the floodgates, and now just about every major international brand, not just Japanese brand, an international nameplate has a manufacturing presence in the United States. But Honda was the first, and was right here in Ohio 50 years ago this month that the Honda Accord was introduced. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And that leads me to this, you know, because once upon a time, American cars were made in America, and foreign cars were made in foreign countries. That, of course, is long gone now. It's been for almost 50 years. Today, we consider cars to be domestic or foreign based on where they are headquartered. The vast majority of Hondas on American roads made in the USA, but it's still a Japanese automaker. But now, even that definition is changing. The government, the U.S. government, has now decided that a car's true citizenship lives in its software, not on its loading dock or even on where its C-suite is located. Last week, that decision claimed its first true casualty when Polestar, which is a car maker that's headquartered in Sweden and builds one of its electric vehicles in South Carolina, basically got kicked out of the U.S. The policy at the center of this is the connected vehicle rule, which was finalized in the final days of the Biden administration, then left in place by the Trump administration. And this bars vehicles with what the government calls a sufficient nexus to China or Russia from being sold in the U.S. market. If a vehicle has a significant nexus to China or Russia, it cannot be sold here. China is a significant investor in Polestar, and Washington's worry is that EVs push constant streams of data through onboard software and cellular connections, and so a car tied to Beijing would be a rolling listening post. That's the concern. So the long and short of it is this. For the very first time, a car made in the U.S. cannot legally be sold in the U.S. Isn't that crazy? It's made here, but they can't sell it here. Now, whether they will continue to make it in the U.S. since they can't sell it here remains to be seen. And I know Polestar is kind of a niche brand. They don't sell a whole lot of them anyway, so maybe this is not all that significant. But pay attention to this, because while Polestar may not be a big loss to the U.S. auto market, the same Chinese company that owns about a third of Polestar owns 100% of Volvo, 51% of Lotus, 17% of Aston Martin, and nearly 10% of Mercedes-Benz. So there are a couple of names in there that might, we'll see where this goes, but kind of interesting. First casualty of the connected vehicle rule. Now you know. Let's see. So 4th of July is coming up on Saturday. Friday is the holiday. We will not be here on Friday, incidentally. There will be no Good Mornings program on Friday because of the holiday, and Friday being the official holiday since it falls on a weekend. But whenever the holiday falls on the weekend and you get an extra day, essentially, because of the government holiday, that means a lot of people are going to be hitting the road because you've got an extra long weekend. Well, AAA projects 72.2 million Americans will travel at least 50 miles from home for Independence Day between they consider the Independence Day travel period from this past Saturday through this coming Sunday. And 72.2 million Americans will travel. This year's domestic travel forecast surpasses last year's record of 71.8 million travelers, but the increase is smaller than recent year-over-year gains. So yeah, there are more people traveling than last year, but the number more, there aren't as many more year-over-year as what there usually are because of the increase in cost. AAA projects 61.4 million people will travel by car because despite higher gas prices, filling up the tank during a road trip is still cheaper than purchasing flights to travel by, especially if you are traveling, you know, with kids. It can get really expensive really fast. But the number of people in the air will also be up, with 5.85 million travelers taking domestic flights over the week of the 4th of July this week. That is a 0.2% increase over last year. One thing to note, if you are flying, in case you didn't already know this, flights through Reagan National Airport, if you're going to Washington or traveling through Washington, if your itinerary goes through Washington, flights through Reagan National Airport will be halted at noon on Independence Day to accommodate celebrations in the nation's capital. So, kind of interesting. I'm sure that the airlines have prepared and planned for that, because it's not like a surprise. They're going to close the airspace around Reagan Airport for the 4th of July. Speaking of 4th of July, you got to stock up for all of your 4th of July gatherings, right? You're going to go to the store and stock up on burgers and hot dogs and drinks and, you know, all of that stuff. Well, just in time for the 4th of July, Kroger is changing, Ohio-based company, Kroger is changing their rewards program to allow customers to get additional savings on their groceries. The Cincinnati-based company announced the changes last week, saying members can now use their loyalty points on purchases inside stores in addition to those made at the Kroger gas pump. So shoppers can now redeem 100 points for a dollar off your grocery purchases, up to $10 in savings per day. Now, 100 points will also get you 10 cents off a gallon at Kroger fuel centers. So if you're putting any more than 10 gallons in your tank, it's still the better deal to take the gas discount than the discount off your grocery bill. But if you don't get gas at Kroger, then this is an alternative. So that is new. That was announced last week. Pass that along. And lastly here, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. While you're out stocking up for the 4th of July, maybe get some seafood, because it seems that Fish Fridays are not just for Lent anymore. I saw this on the Newswire, an interesting new survey finds that Americans rank seafood among the most satisfying end-of-week meals. The most satisfying end-of-week meals. 60% say an interesting meal motivates them through the week. Nearly half of seafood eaters call it one of the most satisfying foods. They cite taste, health benefits, and freshness driving the appeal of seafood. So, you know, just because we're past Lent, don't immediately discount Fish Fridays. Still a thing. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories there to get your Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly sunny today with a high in the 90s. Partly cloudy tonight, low in the 70s. The National Weather Service is warning of a prolonged period of dangerously hot weather. Forecasters say high temperatures will be in the 90s throughout the week with heat index values, the feels-like temperature of 105 or even higher. Health officials point out that consecutive days of excessive heat and humidity combined with little relief overnight can be especially dangerous. People are advised to drink plenty of fluids and stay out of the sun and in the air conditioning. Also check up on relatives and neighbors as heat-related illnesses like heat exhaustion and heat stroke increase significantly during times of extreme heat and high humidity. Remember, you can always get the latest forecast and weather alerts on our website. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine has vetoed a bill requiring voters to provide a photo ID when requesting or casting an absentee ballot.
The governor says that he feels it would create unnecessary hurdles for mail-in voters without adding meaningful election security. DeWine also cites the cost of implementing parts of the bill, which includes a new online absentee ballot portal. Lawmakers could still attempt to override his veto.
WTOL 11's Tatiana Cash reporting. Get more on our website. There's a tremendous need for foster care and adoptive families in Ohio and across the country. Keeping Kids Safe Ohio in Findlay is working to find children a safe and loving home. WFIN's Chris Oakes recently spoke with founder and president Judy Hutton.
I'm turning away children that are in need of a loving home almost every day. I have about 36 foster families with our agency, and that is not enough.
Judy invites people who want to learn more about becoming a foster care or adoptive family to an upcoming informational meeting and says you can also contact their office with questions anytime. Listen back to her full interview with Chris in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts has announced its best main stage series yet. And with that, they are launching their Vision 2035 strategic plan for the next decade of growth at MCPA. And CEO Heather Clough is with us this morning. It's part of the Vision 2035 new title as officially CEO. So congratulations on that.
I was startled when you said it.
So first of all, you weren't kidding when you said that this was a fabulous main stage series. Especially leaning in on the Broadway shows.
Yeah, absolutely. So part of the Vision 2035 that we did was surveys with the community, mm-hmm. and almost 300 people filled it out, and Broadway was number one, the thing they wanted
far
to see
away.
More of.
Yeah.
Far and away. You know, there's others that we're going to move in gradually, but I was pleased that we were able to sort of check that box off, or at least start checking that off mm-hmm. right away with this season. Yeah, it's a lot of blockbusters.
And was that one of those things where it was kind of serendipity, everything fell into place? Because, again, and we've talked about this before, when scheduling the series, especially for a smaller venue such as MCPA, you kind of have to work in the dates that are available for a lot of these tours.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's serendipity, but it also is we've spent the last 5 years really building up our reputation with the tours,
yeah.
you know, and I had a couple of agents actually say to me, you know, we have other offers and we're going to go with yours because we know that you're a respectable, wonderful venue and we treat the artists well and we pay as much as we can afford. And that's one of the sort of tenets of my when I'm booking shows is I pay the artist as much as I possibly can and still stay responsible to MCPA's finances.
Yeah.
And so, I think a lot of people try to pay as little as possible.
That's a good point. It's kind of a different mindset in the industry. So landing these great shows, Christmas Story, the musical, Legally Blonde, the musical, which is a huge hit on Broadway, and Waitress, which, yes. I love that one because, first of all, my wife saw that and immediately her eyes lit up. That's one of those that, you know, might not be necessarily on everyone's radar, but is a fantastic show.
It's a fantastic show. It's the 10th anniversary. Mm. And the person who wrote it, Sarah Bareilles, was very close friends with Gavin Creel. So it's kind of a nice connection there as well.
That's cool. That's cool. And then, of course, Straight No Chaser, which we knew because that had been previously announced. And then Stomp is the other show this year. And correct me if I'm wrong, but they've been here before as well.
Right. It was before I was here. They were here before I was. So 10 years ago, they were here. The show is completely different. I actually have friends in New England that saw it quite recently, and they're kind of the ones that convinced me to put an offer on it because they were like, it was amazing. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah. Now, I know for members, the ticket sales have already begun. And I think for the general public, you've got the season tickets up for sale now.
Yep. So anybody can buy season tickets, and that has really exploded. We are up 35% in season ticket sales over last year.
And
which is super exciting. Yeah.
When do the individual event tickets go on sale?
Yep. So if you're a member, they're on sale now. Mm-hmm. And if you aren't a member, you can become a member. But if you choose not to, they go on sale July 6th.
Okay. So
at 11 a.m.
Okay, so these are shows that will no doubt sell out, especially on that Broadway series or that Broadway section of the series. And as you kind of alluded to, that was one of the things that came out of the Vision 2035 process. Talk a little bit about what the strategic plan, what this, what you're hoping to do with this.
Yeah. So, the first thing I want to say is that we updated our mission statement because it the one that we had from 10 years ago really didn't reflect what MCPA has become. And it is now where the arts inspire and community connects, because that's what we, you know, it's arts and community. That's what MCPA is all about. So we, I guess if I had to say the short answer would be controlled growth. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of potential at MCPA, a lot of things we want to do, programming wise, infrastructure wise, space wise, but we're being smart about it. And this plan allows us that time to figure that out and not growth for growth's sake, but really focused growth where we need it. And I just named a couple of the objectives, you know, programming, community engagement and accessibility, financial sustainability is right up there on that list, facilities and organizational capacity. Those are our five objectives.
I was going to say there are a number of key points in that. Just kind of break some of those down a little bit, especially when you talk about community engagement. What does that mean, or what do you envision that being over the next 10 years?
Yeah, so I think more hands-on activities is huge in that. So adult classes, and you know, we do the dance classes, but adult theater classes, adult visual art classes, those came up really high on the survey. Really trying to remove the barriers that keep people away from MCPA, whether those are financial or programmatic, like they don't like Broadway, so they're not going to come. So what does that look like? How do we engage other people? You know, people like comedy. We don't book a lot of comedy. How can we get into that area? And just partnering with people, you know, just really, I feel like MCPA over the past 10 years has really become an anchor in the community. And we want to grow that. We want to strengthen that.
The financial aspect of it, I mean, all of these things kind of intertwine, but especially with the community engagement and some of the things that you're talking about. you know, bringing in, like, for example, you mentioned bringing in comedians, but obviously that costs money. And so right. financial, you know, sustainability is a part of that. When you say that, or when people hear that immediately, because maybe we're conditioned to think the worst, people may say, oh, does that mean that MCPA is in financial difficulty? That's not necessarily the case.
Not at all. Absolutely not. Our endowment is healthy. It's twice what I think the founders of MCPA really wanted it to be. People are so generous. You know, I think financial sustainability is looking at other ways we can raise revenue besides fundraising. You know, we rent out the facility. Can we grow that aspect? You know, I think our overall goal is to get so we have unearned income, which I've never liked that term, but that means it's contributed, right? People, it's generosity.
Right.
And then earned. How do we increase that earned revenue? Do we rent out the facility for more for the comedy or for more tribute shows? What does that look like? Just so it's sustainable.
Because I know we've talked about in the past, it's very difficult to actually make money on these main stage shows. And that would be true regardless of the size of the venue. A lot of these things don't necessarily make money in and of themselves.
Right, right. I always say that MCPA pretty much gets the last 2% of all the revenue because of all the expenses. If we get to that point, then we make about 2%. But there's other ways, right? Other ways to engage. And like I said, luckily, we have incredibly generous donors and sponsors in town that's recognizing the importance of the arts.
And we talk about the other prongs of that Vision 2035 plan. When you look at it as a whole, then in terms of implementing it, what does that look like, and what are the goals, and how do you move forward with doing that? Again, as we mentioned, given that all of them kind of intertwine, all of the goals kind of intertwine.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we're just diving into the work plans for those. One of the things that we're really focusing, I'm really focusing on first, is the organizational capacity, because we have a team of 10. And there's a lot of growth outlined in here. And, you know, that's a lot. We're one person departments at that point, this point.
Yeah.
So that's sort of my first, which isn't the most exciting thing on the list, but making sure that as we grow, we have the team to support that, that's first.
And I guess the overall point in all of this is that there is a plan, that we're not just moving forward kind of resting on your laurels, or, you know, satisfied with the status quo.
Absolutely. We want to be responsive to the community. That's one thing that survey really pointed out, is like, people want more popular music. So I want to figure out how we can get more popular music and make that work. Absolutely. It's good to have a plan.
But also some challenges that come along with that, but good challenges.
I'm really, really excited. You know, the 10-year anniversary was sort of like a pinnacle, and I thought, okay, is it going to be a slump after that? But not at all. We're all really energized.
And I guess it really, you got to be excited when thinking about, you know, if all of this comes together like you sort of envision it, pretty exciting to think about what MCPA might look like once 2035 gets here. And it'll be here before you know it.
Unfortunately. But yeah, our 20th anniversary is going to be a big blowout.
Again, Heather Clow is with us, CEO of the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts. Again, those season tickets for everyone on sale now. Individual tickets for members are on sale now, and individual tickets for everyone go on sale July 6th. Okay.
So 11 a.m.
Circle that on the calendar. Do not hesitate, because these are shows that will sell out for sure. Heather, thanks very much for being with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
So with the 4th of July coming up, and not just any 4th of July, but the 250th 4th of July, It is a time for celebrating all things truly American, and to get even more specific, celebrating all the things that make us unique in each individual state. And that's why I love this book from award-winning travel writer and Ohio resident Brandi Gleason. It is called Unique Eats and Eateries of Ohio: The People and Stories Behind the Food. And I always love to celebrate all things Ohio, and especially this summer. And of course, it's just in time for our summer road trip adventures. So everything kind of coming together for this. Tell us a little bit about the book, Brandi.
My goodness. Well, I will tell you, it took me 2 years to write it. It was the hardest book that I have ever written. And getting a hold of restaurant owners was one of the biggest challenges that I faced, because when somebody doesn't show up to work, guess who is doing Absolutely. The dishes?
Maybe more in the restaurant business than any other business. Truly hands-on for the owners, for the proprietors, but a labor of love.
It is, because they've poured their heart and soul into something that, you know, maybe grandma used to make, or something that they brought from Germany.
And that's really the point about this book, is that it is as much about the stories as it is about the food.
Oh, it's more about the stories, because I think the story is what makes the restaurant what it is.
Yeah.
Because without the story and the people behind it, it's just food on a plate.
Right. They also pour their heart and soul into the product itself. It's not like they're sitting something on the shelf that they imported from overseas somewhere.
Yeah. Well, and one of the other things that I tried to really integrate into the places that I chose was, you know, what are they doing in their community? Like, have they been there forever?
Yeah.
Or are they supporting a small town baseball team? Or, you know, how are they involved in their community as well? And each and every one really had a reason for being or doing what they were doing.
And by the way, that it's worth mentioning, Dietsch Brothers is certainly on the list. It could not be. I will say this. If Dietsch Brothers was not on the list, I would just dismiss this book entirely, because I can't imagine a list without it. But that's a perfect example of the establishment being part of the community, but the community being part of the establishment, too.
And that is honestly the truth, because when I went there and I ordered a chocolate malt, it was literally made by hand right there. I drank every last drop and can't wait to go back for more.
I would imagine that you can repeat that story over and over again.
Absolutely.
The other thing that is worth noting is it really seems like this is focusing on like the comfort foods. This is not pretentious. This is not elitist. There are an awful lot of really terrific five-star restaurants, but this really is a focus on the everyday, the comfort food, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we could have spent a lot of time on the higher end, or, you know, those places. But if you're really going to niche down and talk about the whole state, mm-hmm. when you look at it, it's mom and pop restaurants who have started from scratch.
Places that people, when they go back to their hometowns years later, they will make it a point to stop at.
110%. One thing we did find are these kids who left home and then they went and worked in five-star restaurants, or they were in California or New York City and they decided to come home because mom and dad are getting older or whatever.
Yeah.
Then they open their restaurants, and these small towns, I'm telling you, some of the bites that you can get in small town Ohio are pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. And sometimes the ambiance is the experience. Sometimes it's the unique dish that is the experience, something that, you know, one place has that no one else has.
Yeah. Well, there's one place in Waldo, Ohio called GNR Tavern. Mm-hmm. It's a cash only place, and it's bologna sandwiches an inch thick with onion and pickles on it. And it's just so surprising. In the middle of nowhere, you find this little, you know, old dive bar looking place, and you go in there and it's like, that is the best bologna sandwich I've ever had.
Yeah. It is the experience that goes along with the meal.
For sure. Absolutely. There, my first time I went to someplace called Cafe Istanbul. It's in Dublin, Ohio. It's along the Scioto River. Mm-hmm. And I was a little nervous, to be honest, because I'd Mediterranean food hadn't been something that I had put on my to-do list right. of eating.
Yeah.
And the first time, you know, they put that baba ganoush in front of me, I was kind of like, ooh, I don't know about this texture. I don't know about this. And then you put it in your mouth and then you're taking in all the flavors. They're coming to your table. They're telling you more about their food. And then they share about, you know, the lamb lollipops that you can get and just all the smells and everything that's coming from the kitchen. It just blows your mind, really.
In case people haven't figured it out, this is really more of a road trip guide disguised as a food book. Is that kind of what you set out to do, or did it just become that?
I probably just naturally became that, because I do think that unintentionally, I do set out to do that, to make sure that people go to a lot of different places, because everybody goes to the natural, the big, you know, the big C's, and, you know, mm-hmm. they'll go to the big towns because that's what makes sense. But I promise, if you go to a small town, you can literally spend 48 hours in a small town and find a lot of things to do beyond just eating food, right? There's just so many shop owners. And yeah. so, yeah, probably just naturally road tripped it.
Yeah. And this may be totally unfair to ask this, because it's probably like asking a parent which is their favorite child. But is there one restaurant, one eatery that really stands out?
That is an unfair question. And I always say there's one place in every quadrant of Ohio. So, like, if you said, I'm going to Toledo, where should I eat? You know what I mean? I would probably point you to Tony Paco's. Sure. If you're coming to Columbus, I'm going to tell you, yeah, go to the Short North and hit up the Schmitz and go walk around German Village. And if mm-hmm. you're going to, you know, go down to Cincinnati, you got to go to Camp Washington Chili, because, you know, who shouldn't try some of that chili at least once?
Right. Brandi Gleason is with us again, author of Unique Eats and Eateries of Ohio, The People and Stories Behind the Food. Do you have a website where folks can learn more about the book?
You can go to reedypress.com or on Amazon. My personal website is gleasonfamilyadventure.com. And I also have americanroadtripping.com that you can find all kinds of little different things that maybe didn't even make the book.
Perfect for this 4th of July and this summer season especially. Brandi Gleason, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for having me, Chris.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
In the news business, there are two separate and distinct groups. Breaking news and the news that is already broken. These are their stories.
Yes, that's right. Time for another installment of the broken news, the odd and unusual side of the headlines. And we begin with a follow-up, a clarification, if you will, to a story that we had last week on the program. You remember when we reported that Gracie, the missing giraffe in Texas, had been found. Well, apparently, that report, we had it, I think, on Tuesday or Wednesday of last week. Apparently, our report was premature. And I was really confused about this, because we reported that she had been found, and then I kept seeing stories that she was on the loose. I thought, did she escape again? Or, you know, what's going on with Gracie, the Texas giraffe? Well, as it turns out, she was not found in the first place. There was a news outlet in, I think, San Antonio, a TV station, that erroneously reported that she had been found, and that's what we picked up on, but that was not the case. Because, as it turns out, a missing giraffe is harder to find than you might think, even in Texas. And that's what we were joking about, that it was, how hard could this be to find this missing giraffe? Gracie got away from the Cedar Hollow Ranch. It was on the loose in the Texas Hill Country for nearly 2 weeks. Online rumors had circulated that she had been spotted, but those turned out not to be true, which kind of makes you wonder what was spotted that someone thought was a giraffe but wasn't. I mean, how do you mistake a giraffe for something else? In Texas, no less. But apparently, After this false sighting, some new information came out. Unlike most giraffes, Gracie has rounded ears as the result of a frostbite injury, which you don't often see in giraffes because they're native to Africa. So they don't very often get frostbite, but Gracie did. So if she ever gets out again, and if you see a giraffe with pointed ears, that's not her. So maybe that was why we had the erroneous report. Somebody saw a giraffe with pointed ears and said, well, that's not Gracie. Because there are more giraffes running around loose in the... Anyway. But Gracie is back. She is fine. And all is well with the world. So, speaking of animal headlines and the broken news, did you hear the story of Matilda the cow? She has become something of a viral internet celebrity after a farmer in Australia, Brooke Atkins, posted a video of Matilda frolicking on the beach. Which, again, is not something you see every day. A cow on the beach. Brooke says this was her first trip ever to the beach, and she absolutely loved it. She jumped off the float, saw the water, and just took off. I was surprised, Brooke says, because cows can be stubborn. And generally, you don't think of cows on the beach. Brooke says that she is already planning more beach visits with Matilda in the future. She says, I think Matilda's just getting her summer body ready. So I reckon there will be plenty more trips to the beach. So if you see a cow at the beach, don't be shocked. Matilda the cow. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a man in Polk County, Florida is suing Waffle House, claiming a restaurant window advertisement distracted him and caused a serious fall. Edward Bolds alleges that he tripped after noticing a large promotion for a limited edition strawberry shortcake waffle. His lawsuit claims the curb that he tripped over was unusually high, poorly maintained, and unpainted, and that he suffered severe and permanent injuries after falling face first onto the pavement. So he is now suing. His legal team argues that it would be disingenuous for Waffle House to suggest that Mr. Bold should have been watching where he was walking, which the first thing that I would think, right? But that would be disingenuous, since it was Waffle House who distracted his attention in the first place. I don't know how much he's seeking in damages. But there you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Dine, shop, play. Visit with us.
Kick off 4th of July festivities with the July 4th Spectacular on July 3rd at the Hancock County Fairgrounds. There's a 5K, car show, kids zone, flea market, and live music with Doug Duffy and Bad Band. The evening is capped off with fireworks at dusk. Get all the details at visitfinley.com/4th.
For more information about this event and others, go to visitfinley.com, home of the Hancock County Convention and Visitors Bureau, a division of Findlay Hancock County Alliance.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. So we're coming up on America's semi-quincentennial, our 250th birthday. And on this occasion of American independence, how patriotic are Americans today? Well, this is actually kind of sad. A new YouGov survey of a little over 1,000 Americans finds that there are sharp political divides over patriotism. And that's not really the way it should be, that patriotism should be a partisan thing. I mean, we all should agree that we all are patriotic. We all love our country. But this is what it's sad, but it's not surprising, because this is what happens when one side tells their followers that the other guy hates America, or, you know, one side tells their followers that the other side is trying to destroy what made, you know, the principles that our country was founded on. So you get these political divides over patriotism. Overall, in this YouGov survey, 70% say that they are proud to be American. Only 70%. That is 96% of Republicans, but only 58% of Democrats. Now, most Americans, 62% to be exact, define patriotism as acknowledging our problems and seeking solutions. That's 62%, while 25% define patriotism as supporting your country unconditionally. Half of Republicans favor the unconditional definition, compared to just 11% of Democrats. Some 41% of Americans call themselves very patriotic, and 44% view the Republican Party as more patriotic than the Democratic Party. 31%, incidentally, have that the other way around. Kind of interesting. Meanwhile, 55% believe that Americans are generally becoming less patriotic. We are becoming less patriotic. And satisfaction with U.S. democracy, the way our country is functioning, satisfaction remains low. 61% rated at 5 out of 10 or lower, compared to just 38% who felt that way when they asked the same question back in 1977. Well, with America's 250th birthday right around the corner now, this summer is shaping up to be one for the history books in more ways than one. Lifestyle expert and mom of three, Marissa Brainy, is back with us once again with what you need for a celebration worthy of a semi-quincentennial, from your backyard barbecue to your summer road trip. Marissa, thanks very much for taking the time. How are you thinking about summer entertaining this year, given that this is such a big 4th of July, such a big summer?
It is such a special summer. Thanks for having me, Chris. And I think it's really the perfect excuse to get a little extra festive. I'm partnering with some great brands to help us do that. So whether you're hosting that backyard barbecue, heading to a block party, we want food on the table that looks amazing, tastes incredible, and doesn't stress us out. So I am obsessed with Northwest Grown Sweet Cherries, because these are the ultimate 4th of July hosting hack. Fresh cherries bring this gorgeous pop of red to the table, complementing that red, white, and blue spread. They're really just also the sweet taste of summer in a bowl. And beyond how pretty they look, how great they taste, Northwest cherries are genuinely good for you. They're high in fiber, they're packed with vitamin C, loaded with anti-inflammatory and antioxidant properties. And here's what I really love. Every bag of Northwest cherries tells a real American story, because sweet cherry growing in the Pacific Northwest started nearly 180 years ago. So when you buy these and serve them, you are supporting generations of family farms and local communities. Of course, you can find them at supermarkets nationwide and learn more at nwcherries.com.
And of course, you've got the whole George Washington cherry tree story, the tie-in to American history and all of that, if you want to go in that direction. So,
absolutely.
Now, I know a lot of families planning summer road trips and maybe, again, doing something special to mark this historic 250th anniversary. Any advice for making that happen on a budget? Because a lot of folks are thinking about cost first and foremost this year as well.
Of course. And honestly, this is the year to hit the road, because America's 250th really reminds us of all of the amazing destinations that we really have right in our backyard. So it is road trip summer for sure. But when it comes to travel, we want to plan smart to really stretch that dollar. That's where Travelodge by Wyndham comes in. They have hotels across the country, which makes them a really convenient and affordable base for a summer adventure. And what I think is really cool is that about 70% of Travelodge properties are within an hour's drive of a national park. Plus, they have a decade-long partnership with the National Parks Conservation Association. They're really helping preserve those iconic places for future generations. Right now, Travelodge by Wyndham has a variety of great promotions too, including up to 20% off your stay. So that helps budget-wise as well. Visit Travelodge.com to start planning your trip.
All right. And also, you have something for, it says here, for your home to get you ready for all of the summer hosting that you may be doing and even beyond the summer.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love supporting American-made brands. We need those hosting helpers at home. And Whirlpool Corporation is the only major kitchen and laundry appliance company that is based and owned right here in the U.S. It was founded in 1911 and never left. And its family of brands, KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, and more, are trusted in 3 out of 4 American homes. So as families gear up for their own celebrations, few products I want to mention. First, we start with hosting a crowd. The KitchenAid 360 Max Jet Third Rack Dishwasher is going to be a game changer. This is KitchenAid's best capacity dishwasher because that third rack alone fits 10 extra glasses and mugs. So you really have room for everything with this. It's 50 plus total wash jets across 5 wash arms, offer targeted cleaning on every level, so great for a crowd. And then if you want to keep your whole laundry routine fresh this summer, I know I'm washing towels and bathing suits basically every day. The Whirlpool front load tower is a must. This features the fresh flow vent system, an industry-first UV clean technology that actually reduces bacteria in the wash without high temperatures or fading your fabric. So all of those summer brights and those festive 4th of July fits are going to look their best for all the summer celebrations.
Those Whirlpool appliances proudly made in Ohio and made in the USA. I know that is a focal point of the company. So great stuff there. Again, Marissa Brainy with us this morning talking about what you need for a celebration worthy of a semi-quincentennial. I've been practicing that word for almost a year now, so I'm going to get my money's worth. Marissa, thanks very much for taking the time. Where do we get more information?
Hey, you said it well. For all that practice, it paid off. Just head to my website. It's marissabrainy.com and go to the blog section.
Marissa, thanks very much. A happy 4th of July.
You too. Nice to talk with you as always.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program, as Congress and the President go back and forth on a significant housing affordability bill, a new bank rate analysis finds many homebuyers are overpaying because they're skipping one simple step in the mortgage process, amounting to what they call a hidden homeownership tax. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.